everyone. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to jump on here and say it came to my attention after Grant and I had recorded that I believe I had been mispronouncing the name of our victim in today's story, Tamla Horsford. So I had been saying Tamla throughout the episode. So I just wanted to say apologies for that. I believe her name is pronounced Tamla. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll get on with the show.
Hello, and welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and more. Did I have to repeat that opening phrase to myself like 18 times before today? Absolutely.
I know. Buffy had to leave the building.
Yeah, Buffy got punted out. I'm Grant Jacoby.
I'm Bailey Bennett.
And welcome to New Year, Same Us.
Yeah.
Same podcast.
Oh, yeah. We haven't. We absolutely haven't grown sort of or improved at all, but we are still here. So
still here, still kicking it. 2022.
Yeah. So we're back. We're back in your feeds, and we're back with some regular-esque episodes.
What a concept.
I know. So for those of you who maybe haven't been following along over the last few weeks to months to years of Resting Witch Face, we did sort of take just a very extended hiatus just over the last couple of years as COVID was raging in our lives and just, you know, we weren't feeling maybe up to recording all the time. So we did return in the fall with an 8-episode season of Resting Witch Face that was exclusively us talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was really just something I think that you and I personally needed to get out.
Yeah, a little passion project.
Yeah,
has never hurt anybody.
Yeah, and a lot of you were nice enough to follow us along on that journey, which was really wonderful, and we hope that you enjoyed that. But at this point, we're returning to your feeds in a more semi-regular way. I think that the plan from here on out is for us to put out 10-episode seasons of Resting Witch Face, so you can expect 10 weeks in a row of content from us, and then we'll probably take short breaks between those seasons just so we can give ourselves more time to sort of catch up on our recording and make sure that we're doing this in a sustainable and fun way for us so that we can be in your ears again. So
yeah,
I think that's all the business.
Yeah, I think that's all the housekeeping. Apologies that we took, you know, almost 2 years off when literally we just like sat around doing nothing, like easily could have recorded virtually and just were like, no.
Mm-hmm. But like, how many people, I mean, weren't we all just not wanting to do anything for 2020?
That, and also I think that like, especially during, I never know the correct way to refer to it. I tend to say like peak quarantine.
Right.
Because people are just like people refer to like now as post-COVID.
Which is
like,
certainly not. No, nope, it's still going
on. That's how that works. But I do think that, like, especially with our genre and content, it was just, like, didn't feel like the right time to be like, okay, so the world is falling apart. Let's talk about murder.
Yes. And also, like, I was saying this to you earlier, Grant. We were like, so are we going to do our complaints at the end of the episode? It does feel particularly kind of gross to be just complaining. But the thing is that we are going to do it. So
we're going to do it. And I think that we're going to lean more towards, like, true pettiness. I mean, I think in some of, you know, early episodes we were complaining about politics and
just so young. What a different time.
It's like things that we
so
were like
young,
really
wild,
about.
And free.
I know, so naive. But I guess to get into things, do you have a badass bitch of the week?
We're gonna do badass bitch. Well, yeah, we did. I guess we sort of did badass bitch during the Buffy season, but it was just Sarah Michelle Gellar every week, so like I don't know.
She swept that category.
She let the Academy know she's our big winner. So another extremely just sort of obvious badass bitch that like every person and their mother has already distinguished as an incredibly important woman of our generation. But I just want to talk about Zendaya for a minute. I feel like we've done her before, and I don't care.
I don't think we have.
Okay, I don't care if
we did J.K. Rowling like 18 times, which like we're going to have to like retcon that.
Again, like it was a different time, and we were sort of so naive. I want to talk about Zendaya. Currently, as we're recording, we are finally getting back into the second season of Euphoria. Grant, I can't remember if you watch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do. I haven't seen the second of the like standalone episodes that came out a year ago, but
it's beautiful. But I mean, what a gorgeous, haunting, dark, hot show. And Zendaya is bringing 100% to every single episode. It's just a show that I love so much. But I also know that she's obviously thriving in many other aspects of her life right now. I don't know if you saw Dune, but I
did not.
She's really billed as being a star of that film, and I don't want to spoil anything for you, but she gets about 7 minutes of screen time. But she's going to be much more highly featured in the second Dune film.
I see.
But it was a great movie, and she and Timothy together, it's sort of too powerful. I don't really even know how to handle it. I'm also aware she is involved in the Spider-Man franchise, but that is just something I cannot speak to, and I haven't seen a Spider-Man film since it starred Tobey Maguire, so sort of don't come at me about that. I know it's important, and she's dating Tom Holland, which is very important to people as well, and they seem very cute together, but I just think in general, she's just taken over and is a gorgeous, gorgeous, talented human being, so.
Yeah. I just want to say that, like, for someone who is really in tune with pop culture and like film, TV, music, trivia, like all the above. Mm-hmm. I just don't give a shit who's dating who.
That's very interesting. I do care, unfortunately.
I care like in terms of like the fact that Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. are still married. Like I care about that.
Of course.
But I don't care. Like good for Zendaya and Tom Holland for dating.
Right.
Like that's great. But like when I'm going through, like I clicked on one related post on Instagram and now a mm-hmm. decent amount of my Discover page on Instagram is just like ship accounts for that couple. I'm just like, that's great for them. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I just don't care about heterosexuality that much.
That's a really strong take. I would also say that TikTok is teaching me just how many celebrity relationships are staged, which like I should have known. We should have known. I'm not surprised. Well, like,
but
I think like a lot of Taylor Swift's relationships, like, I don't think any of us believe that Taylor Swift and Harry Styles were ever dating. Like that sort of situation. Also, I believe like Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas, like there's a lot of just like PR relationships. Allegedly.
Like Shawn Mendes and Camila.
What was that? Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of hot takes about that.
Yeah, we're not gonna get into that discourse. Yeah. We're above that. So
also just like to say, not that I've ever posted on TikTok, but I did follow you and you've not followed me back.
Oh shit. So, I mean, it's very embarrassing that I don't want people to know that I'm on TikTok.
Yeah. I open it when like if someone will text me a TikTok. Mm-hmm. I get all my TikTok like information from Instagram, which just shows what generation I'm in.
Well, that's, you know, we're 30. Some of us are 30 and some of us are pushing 30. So
some of us are indeed 30. Won't say who, but some.
It's half possible. Of us possible.
In this chat are 30.
Do you have a badass pitch?
Yes.
Of course.
So during the pandemic, just like the past couple of years, like music has always been really important to me, but like music took on like a very different shape in my life where I feel like music was always kind of like to fill the void of like a commute. Mm-hmm. And like I'd find an artist I like or an album I like and listen to it while I work and like commute and blah, blah, blah. But suddenly when like I was forced to be sitting at home like all the time, I just like found music, especially like really aggressive pop music, to be like my escape, especially when I go on my like 2 to 3 hour mental health walks around Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I might have already done her before in one of our like one-off episodes during the pandemic. I don't care. But Charlie XCX is my baddest bitch of the week. And her music really took over my life the past couple years because it's like party music, but it's like not sad party music, but there's a depth to it that is, I was surprised to find. Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of kind of experimental, she's a very experimental approach to pop music. So it's just like, unlike anything I'd ever heard before. And it was kind of one of those things where like, I first heard it and I was like, ugh, like, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. And then I kept listening to it more and I was just like, wait, this is like a fucking genius. Mm-hmm. And she's also just an incredible ally of the LGBTQ community. And like her entire audience base is basically gays.
Of course.
And she leans into it and loves it, which is just so refreshing to see. And also what I also really like about her is that she, like, no disrespect to, like, obviously, like, I love artists like Adele and Beyonce who, like, release an album and then disappear for, like, 7 years.
Yeah.
And it's, like, cool. Like, that's great. Like, you're doing your art on your own time. That's great. But, like, what I love about Charlie is that she really pumps out music. And what she does a lot is she'll, like, share even, like, demos with fans. And, like, her, she recorded an album during quarantine called How I'm Feeling Now. Mm-hmm. It's fucking excellent. And she literally, like, recorded it in 6 weeks, like, with the input of her fans. Like, she'd go on Instagram Live and be like, what do you think about this verse?
That's
or these
cool
lyrics? Or, like, and just a very kind of communal approach, which I just love. And it just was kind of a very different level of connecting during this time. Mm-hmm. And especially connecting from, like, an artist to their fans in a very appreciative way, which I really... really spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And then also just the music just fucking slaps. And this, you know, again, if you're like on these like long walks, it's just like, I need something to distract me. Like, how about the most aggressive sounds in my ears that just like make me want to be like shaking my ass in a club, which will like never happen again
someday. But I love that.
I'll be too old by the time the clubs like really reopen up. I'm gonna be too old.
We're gonna be in a walker. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, these noisy joints are already starting to click clack their way to the grave.
Jesus. Yeah, I can't say that I have listened to Charlie XCX all that much, but which I should remedy. But
I can make you a little playlist.
That would be nice.
She's not for everyone. Like, my mm-hmm. partner hates her. Mm-hmm. And I think
blast him.
Yeah. No, but like I respect it because I didn't like her at first. Like, I found her music very, like, monotone and just kind of, like, big beats and, like, songs about, like, getting fucked up. And I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But then when there's a lot of layers underneath it, and she's also just, like, really fucking hot.
Yeah.
And, like, I'll see, like photo shoots she's done. I'm just like, she's one of the few people that I'm like, ooh, I'm questioning my sexuality right now.
I love that. I will say that I remember when Spotify Wrapped 2021 happened. Every single gay that I know, top genre was dance pop. And it was just like, Charlie.
Yeah. So not to put also myself on blast, she's been my number one artist 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. 2020 and 2021. And this year I was in her top 0.05%.
Wow. Good for you.
And it was a moment of like, I was like, I'm actually like really embarrassed that that's really all I've been listening to for 2 years. But then also it's like a true dedicated fan.
I mean, Grant, it's better than the alternative, which is me, which is, first of all, I have Apple Music. How embarrassing. Oh, during yeah. Spotify Wrapped week, I have nothing. I have absolutely nothing. And then also, I listen to podcasts so much that my music consumption is serial killer level low. Like, it'll be like, you listened to 50 hours of music this year. That's what I'm doing. So.
Well, you know what? Good for you in a certain way, because I literally haven't listened to a single podcast episode since March 2020.
Oh, my God. It's all I do.
Okay. Because you're not the only one I've had this discussion with. Because I think that for me, I was listening to more podcasts than I was music prior to COVID. Mm-hmm. And then it switched, I think, because for me, music became more of escapism.
Yeah.
And whereas podcasts are very obviously like require a lot more attention span in some ways. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I love dark shit and I just like wasn't able to like enter that place. But I do feel now that I'm going to start commuting into an office and I have a car ride. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. got to pick back up.
Can't wait.
Don't even know where to start.
You can start with this podcast.
True. Right. I can listen to my own podcast. I used to listen to us for like a little while, mm-hmm. and then I stopped. I don't know why I stopped.
I still listen to us. I have to admit, but it's also maybe, like, a self. I'm like, I listen to us, and I'm like, Bailey, stop interrupting Grant so much. Like, why do you say "like" every other word? It's actually it's a self care exercise.
You definitely can learn a lot about your own vocal failings. Mm-hmm. If you record a podcast, I think for me, what I enjoy about listening to us back, and maybe I should, is kind of remembering where we were at that time, mm-hmm. or like even like the stories. Like I was doing my own research for my episode for next week, and I literally I was texting you this whole time, but I was like going through like our entire feed, being like, "Did we do this already?"
Yeah,
like, and it was kind of fun because I went back and I was like, "Well, I was able to tell which ones were which because like who did which one just by like."
Yeah.
Memory's sake. But then it was also like, oh, this one, I think I remember what happened during this. But at some point I was like, I need to go back and listen to us talk about it.
I would listen to old episodes of Resting Witch Face earlier in the pandemic because it felt like I was hanging out with you. So.
Oh, tears.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. One, not that I regret being as careful as I was, you know, during all of 2020 into like up until the vaccine, but mm-hmm. definitely like a regret I have is that you and I lived like maybe 2 miles from each other and just couldn't bother to even go for a sensible COVID walk.
Never saw each other. Anyway, I mean, should we get into the story for today?
Sure. Yeah.
So whoops. No, it's fine. I mean, we have to start off with 15 minutes of talking about nothing. I'm going to be doing the story today. I already sort of gave you a heads up about this, Grant, but it sounds like you don't mm-hmm. know this story.
I don't, and I've already forgotten what it is.
Okay, great. So the story that I'm going to be telling you today is one that, like, I really haven't stopped thinking about this for a long time now. So a lot of you guys may know about it already because it really rose to prominence in the summer of 2020. During the Black Lives Matter movement and the protests surrounding George Floyd's murder. So this was a time when a lot of people were looking back on, I mean, many different moments in recent history, but they were really looking back on like some unexplained tragedies that may have been overlooked at the time. And this one stands out as being especially chilling and confusing to me. So I'm going to be talking today about the unexplained death of Tomla Horsford. So I got a lot of this information from actually two different Rolling Stone articles by Niall Capello, as well as our girl Wikipedia. So let's get into it. On November 3rd, 2018, Tomla Horsford attended an adult sleepover party in Cumming, Georgia, at the home of a friend. The party was attended by a group of, quote, football moms, as well as a few men. Tomla was the only Black person in attendance. Everyone else at the party was white. The next morning, the 40-year-old mother of five was found dead in the backyard.
Oh.
So Horsford was born in St. Vincent in the Grenadines, which is a country in the Caribbean, in 1978. She lived there with her family until they moved to the Bronx in 1989, and she met her husband, Leander, in Florida, and he had a daughter from a previous relationship, and they went on to have five sons together, the youngest of which was only 4 years old when she died. Mm. So 5.5 years before this incident, they had moved to Georgia for Leander's work, and Tomla became really well-loved by the community there. They started to make friends and establish themselves in Georgia. They did live in a primarily white suburban region of Atlanta in Forsyth County, which I feel like I now have an awareness of because of the hellish 2020 election where we were like
seriously
biting our nails over every single county in Georgia and what they and mm-hmm. what votes were going to come in. But it's an area that, I mean, no surprise, has a history of racism. It's the South, a history of violence towards Black residents. And while the landscape of Georgia is slowly changing, as we saw last year, as early as 1990, according to this Rolling Stone article, the entire county was recorded as having only 14 Black residents. And that was only, you know, 30 years ago.
Wow.
So on the night of November 3rd, 2018, Tomla was going to celebrate the party of one of her friends who was named Jeanne Myers. The group of moms at the party had mostly met through a local youth football league that their children played in, and Jeanne invited them all to spend the night at her house for her birthday party so that no one would be drinking and driving home. According to different accounts, so this is a little bit weird. As I said, I was going off of this Rolling Stone article, and then I was also looking at Wikipedia and glancing at other articles a bit as well. And the timeline differs a lot. The Rolling Stone article says that Tamla arrived at 8:30, and the Wikipedia article says she arrived at 10. And other parts of the timeline are also different. I feel like the Rolling Stone article is probably more accurate.
I would have to assume so.
So, yeah. So I think we can say Tamla arrived at the party around 8:30 after cooking dinner for her children and saying goodbye to her husband for the night. She brought a bottle of tequila with her and an overnight bag, and she changed into her pajamas upon arriving at the party. So the party was originally meant to be all women, but Jeanne's boyfriend, whose name is Jose Barrera, and the husband of another one of the attendees, whose name was Tom Smith, ended up being in attendance. All in all, the group included 9 women, those 2 men, and 1 husband who, according to police interviews, only dropped off and picked up his wife. Out of these 12, okay, 8 people, including Tamla, were planning to spend the night. So the night started off with the women drinking, watching football, and playing games together upstairs, while the 2 men watched football downstairs in the finished basement. Horsford was a regular smoker, the only regular smoker in the group, so she was stepping out on the balcony several times during the night to have a cigarette, and she also smoked marijuana during the party, which she had brought with her, but Jeanne asked her to stop because she thought that her boyfriend Jose wouldn't approve. So Jose is actually, at the time, is a pre-trial lawyer, so like sort of similar to a parole officer. So she, like, I think, thought that he wouldn't like Tamla smoking in the house or outside. Eventually, the 2 men joined the party as well, and they played Cards Against Humanity together, and they all continued drinking. So photos and videos captured that night show that Tamla was having a good time. She was happy. And while she was drinking, you know, like a somewhat significant amount of tequila, she didn't appear overly drunk in these videos. So the guests who were not planning to spend the night started leaving the party around 11:30 p.m. And those who were staying started to make their way to bed over the next couple of hours. So by 1:30 a.m., Jeanne and her boyfriend Jose also went to bed, but Horsford was still awake at this time, and she was last seen alive by a woman named Bridget Fuller, who was picked up by her husband at 1:47 a.m. So Bridget would later tell police that at the time, Horsford was eating a bowl of gumbo, and she told Bridget that she was going to smoke one more cigarette before going to bed. And the home security system tells us that the back door was opened, closed, and then opened again one last time at 1:57 a.m. So this is potentially an important detail. And from what I can gather from my research, it seems that the door was left open all night. So
okay.
One other discrepancy, as I described before, was the timeline in the morning. So the Rolling Stone article says that the body was discovered around 8:45 a.m., which makes more sense with the timeline of the 911 call. The Wikipedia article says it could have been found as early as 7:30 a.m., which is like more concerning because the 911 call was put in at 9. So I don't know, take that with a grain of salt. But Rolling Stone cites the 8:45 a.m. timeline when Tamla's body was discovered by Madeline Lombardi, who is Jeanne's aunt who lived with them. So she like woke up to make her morning cup of coffee and looked out the window and saw Tamla's body laying face down in the grass behind the house. And she immediately went to wake up Jeanne. According to the Rolling Stone article, what she said to Jeanne was, there seemed to be something wrong with her, quote, friend from the islands.
Oh.
Yeah. So Jeanne and her boyfriend get up, go downstairs and see what's going on. And they call the police together right before 9 a.m. to report what had happened, saying, quote, "She's not moving one bit. She's not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She's stiff." Quote, "She was drinking and it looks like, I'm guessing maybe she fell off the balcony," Jeanne said.
Oh.
So the police arrive at 9:07 a.m. And Tamla is pronounced dead at the scene. Her body is immediately sent for an autopsy. But right away, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office really begin to look at the death as an accident right away. So they're supporting the theory that her intoxication had caused her to fall from the second story deck behind the house. And let me just say here before I go any further, it's entirely possible that Tamla's death was simply a tragic accident. Everything that we're saying here is conjecture, but the problem is that there are so many issues with the investigation around her death that we might never really truly know what happened. So her toxicology report from the autopsy, unsurprisingly, tests positive for THC. We know that she was smoking marijuana at the party. And her blood alcohol content was at 0.238, which is almost three times the legal limit to drive. So I will say that that blood alcohol level for most people would be quite drunk. It's a level of disorientation, possibly vomiting, and blacking out is likely at that level. So, however, I will remind you that right before she allegedly stepped outside to have the cigarette, she was coherent enough to be eating and talking to another woman at the party, even if it was only a quick exchange. And, you know, from the videos earlier in the night, it didn't seem like she was out of control of her facilities. So make of that what you will. But additionally, Jose Barrera, Jeanne's boyfriend, said that he found an unlit cigarette and a lighter on the deck. So 4 months after the case was opened, the sheriff's office made their official determination that the death was caused by an accidental fall and cited her THC and blood alcohol levels as leading to this fall. Yes.
Hold on. I'm sorry. You might get to this, but like if they did an autopsy, how did she die? Do we know?
There's more. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the initial autopsy discovered multiple blunt force injuries, which the office said would have been caused by the fall. So they're basically saying she sustained such bad injuries from falling from a second story deck that she died on the spot. So,
I mean, I guess if she fell, you said she was found face down.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess like in theory from a second story balcony, if you were super fucked up and you fell onto your face, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it, but.
Right. I mean, I think there's always like, it's the sort of thing where it's like, if you fell, even if it wasn't from that great a height, but you fall in just the right way, that it could be fatal. Like, I totally see that. But obviously, just like the circumstances of this situation, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look good that she's the only Black person at this party in a racially divided part of Georgia, and her death seems so inexplicable. So clearly, family and friends were pretty surprised and confused by this determination. Yes, Tamla had been highly intoxicated, but witness accounts and the videos from the night show that she was still seemingly in control of her facilities. So furthermore, the deck in the backyard had almost a 4-foot railing that would have prevented you from falling over. Mm-hmm. And the fall to the ground would have only been about 15 to 20 feet at the most.
That's not very much.
Right. And it's onto grass. As far as I can tell, it's not like down onto like a concrete patio or something like that. She was found in the grass. So many speculated that a fall from such a height just would not have been severe enough to cause the injuries that she had, as well as her death. Additionally, the family felt that the scene had not been properly preserved. So not all the evidence was tested, and potential witnesses were not immediately being interviewed because they just weren't treating it as an instance of foul play. They were immediately sort of deciding this death was accidental. And the family wondered if the investigation would have gone differently if she were not a Black woman at an all-white party.
Probably.
So, yeah. So they question, the family is really questioning some of the individuals who work at the county sheriff's office, including Deputy Coroner Chris Shelton, who had actually been forced to resign from a nearby police force in 2014 for distributing photos of himself posing with racist dolls. So there's a sort of a history of it within the police force. However,
what, a history of racism in the police?
Isn't that crazy?
I've never heard of that before.
I will say it's been stated that Shelton allegedly did not work on Tomla's case, if that means anything. So
it doesn't.
So by February 20th of 2019, 30 people, including friends, family, and partygoers, had been interviewed, and Joe Perkins of the sheriff's office stated, quote, "It was a party. They were drinking. She was drinking. Most of the partygoers had gone to bed at the time, and she was on the deck alone." Another piece of this that people question is, like, if people had just been going to bed 30 minutes or so before her death, would they not have heard her fall from the deck that was right outside their windows? Or, like, maybe she would have screamed, or, like, I don't know.
That, and you said, I mean, do you know how tall she was?
I don't.
Because a 4-foot railing is pretty high, unless she was, like...
Well, something...
I mean, I know you can fall from wherever, but...
Right. So, I think I'll mention... I think I mentioned this later, but... the speculation has been that she potentially leaned over the railing to vomit and, like, just went too far. There was also a possibility that maybe she was, like, sitting up on the railing to smoke a cigarette. But it is weird to me that the cigarette is unlit. You know what I mean? Like, it. So yeah. I think it makes more sense that she would have gone outside, put the cigarette and the lighter down on the table next to her, and then, like, went to vomit, and that's when she would have fallen, rather than her, like, sitting up on the railing to smoke. Because I think if that were the case, she would have had the cigarette in her hand, or it would have already been lit.
I was gonna say, I feel like if you found the cigarette and lighter near her body, that would indicate that it went over the railing with her. But was there any vomit found?
That's a really good point. I mean, none of my research has shown that there was. So Tomla's family and friends then call for a second independent autopsy that was conducted by the Georgia Bureau of Investigations. This medical examiner's report said Tomla had blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities, including abrasions on the face, 4 types of hemorrhages on the skull and brain, dislocation of her right wrist, and cuts on her arms and legs. She also suffered a broken neck and a laceration to the right ventricle of her heart.
Nope.
She
did not fall.
I mean, it's just, that is wild to me. She was also found to have a small amount of anti-anxiety medication in her system. There's a little bit of complication surrounding this. I'm not really going to get into this, but I did read one article where people have really been questioning where this anti-anxiety medication came from. I believe it's Xanax. And there's speculation that one of the other women at the party was known for selling Xanax to her friends, but everyone said she had not given any to Tomla that night. But the reason that this is important is just because, like, having a Xanax in your system along with that much alcohol, along with that much marijuana, could have put her into more of a state of disorientation. But there isn't a lot of answers around why they found that. The lead investigator, who also examined Tomla's body position when she was found at the scene, quote, "Most notable when Tomla was turned over was the fact that she had come to rest face down. Her head had not been canted to one side or the other. Horsford's legs were also found to be extended behind her, with both feet pointing to the right and her right arm close to her body. Her left arm was found extended and bent at the elbow." So her injuries and her resting position make advocates doubt whether this could have been the result of such a fall, and speculate that the injuries to her arms and hands could be seen as defensive wounds, suggesting that an altercation could have happened before going over the edge of the deck, or that she was even potentially placed in the backyard because her mm-hmm. resting position was so sort of strange. So as I mentioned before, really frustratingly, potential evidence may also have been compromised or missed completely in this investigation. So
of course,
the scene was never secured. And Jose Barrera, who is the pre-trial officer, the boyfriend of the woman that lived in this house, told investigators that he had actually touched the body and said he moved Horsford's leg while he was trying to figure out if she was still alive. He also said that he moved the unlit cigarette and the lighter on the deck before he saw the body, and he was the one who allegedly found the cigarette and the lighter outside.
Interesting.
But because the police believed the death to be an accident, they never fingerprinted any of the evidence.
Of course not.
Plus, Barrera stated on the original 911 call that security cameras were installed and pointed at the backyard, but of course, the batteries were dead and the cameras were not recording.
Oh.
So we love that. During the autopsy, a sexual assault kit was not done, and fingernail clippings were never collected, which of course could have been utilized to see if she maybe had to defend herself in an altercation. They can sometimes find DNA under people's fingernails. Mm-hmm. That was not conducted. Furthermore, while speaking with police about 2 weeks after the death, fellow party attendee Stacy Smith expressed doubt that Horsford could have fallen. Quote, "I don't get it at all," Stacy told police. "I mean, I've been on that deck like a million times. I've looked and I've tried, testing a theory that a drunk Tomla had leaned over to vomit but gone too far, and I don't understand." Stacy also says that Tomla wasn't acting sick despite the amount of alcohol she drank. Another partygoer, Bridget, who was the last one to see her alive, said Tomla was a, quote, "seasoned drinker," and says it would have taken an enormous amount of alcohol to knock her on her ass.
Also, I mean, I'm pretty sure, not that I have any medical knowledge, but so if you're drinking, mm-hmm. it's not like your blood alcohol content is going to be what it is upon like your first sip or whatever. Mm-hmm. It increases over time if you've been drinking a lot. Mm-hmm. So in theory, she could have been like, by the time they tested her blood alcohol, like it could have been super duper high, but at the time of her death, it may not have been as high. So she right. could have like had she not been killed, she might have gotten to the point of blacking out or mm-hmm. vomiting or whatever, mm-hmm. but there's a chance that she died hours earlier.
Right. Right. No, I think I didn't find anything in here about her exact time of death, but it seems like mm-hmm. it would have happened right around 2 a.m.
Right. Well, yeah, I was going to say that would also be important to know is, so she was last seen at 1:47 a.m. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. If she didn't die until 3:30 a.m., mm-hmm. that'd be a different story. Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess they can pinpoint to that specificity now a lot of the time. But again, like I right. said, like, they weren't really treating this case as right. any foul play. So there isn't a lot of the evidence that you would normally expect in a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
So in February of 2019, things got even more complicated when Jose Barrera was actually fired for using his position as a pretrial officer to illegally access the incident report for the case through their database. So,
oh boy. And he's the boyfriend. He lived in that house?
I don't know if he lived there, but he is the boyfriend of the woman that owned the house. And he was, yes, there that night.
That's not good.
It's interesting because, like, I think, of course, your mind immediately turns to the two men that were at the party. Mm-hmm. Jose comes up frequently. The other man, Tom Smith, really doesn't come up in any of these conversations. But the thing about Jose is that we know that they allegedly only went to bed around 1:30 a.m. So
mm-hmm.
is there a possibility that Jose got back out of bed to go downstairs to get some water, or like went downstairs to purposely talk to Tomla? There's people who think there could have been like a sexual advance made towards her, and that's what could have started an altercation. I mean, again, this is all conjecture, but for what reason would Jose have been trying to illegally access this file?
Right.
So additionally, Tomla's close friend, Michelle Wynn Graves, helped to bring this information to light. And she's really had an ongoing conflict with the rest of the people from the party. Seven of the party guests actually ended up suing Michelle Graves for defamation for posting Facebook posts that basically accused them all of being responsible for Tomla's death. While this lawsuit was dismissed, they have appealed. So the other side of this is like, if this really was an accident, the people at this party are, I mean, it seems like especially the women who are friends with her are distraught over this situation and are now being accused of being murderers when many of them probably had nothing to do with it. But again, like, we just don't know what happened. And it just seems so strange.
Yeah, I'm really not buying the accidental fall story based on just her injuries. So
yeah, the case faded from the headlines until 2020, shortly after George Floyd's murder. On June 5th, 2020, Ralph E. Fernandez, who's the Horsford family attorney, wrote a letter to Horsford's husband, Leander, claiming that his team's investigation into the details of the case strongly suggested homicide. It said in part, quote, "Witness statements are in conflict. A potential subject handled the body as well as the evidence prior to law enforcement arriving. Evidence was disposed of and no inquiry followed. The scene was not preserved." He also stated that Horsford's injuries were, quote, "consistent with those of a physical struggle," but that the absence of photos from the initial autopsy prevented a definitive conclusion. An Atlanta journalist published this letter a few days later. These autopsy photos would become quite a point of contention, as it's pretty unheard of to not take photos during an autopsy. And while they're really going back and forth about these autopsy photos, and there's claims that photos were taken, but to this day, no one has seen them. They have not been released to the family's attorney. So at this point, her story spreads once again, starting with protesters in her hometown of Georgia who are including Tomlin's name in their protests during the Black Lives Matter movement. A change.org petition to reopen the case got more than 600,000 signatures, and the story got the attention of celebrities like T.I., 50 Cent, Gabrielle Union, and Kim Kardashian. So under new pressure, on June 12th, 2020, Forsyth County Sheriff Ron Freeman sent a letter requesting that the case be reopened and investigated by the Georgia Bureau of Investigations. However, on July 28th, 2021, they concluded this reinvestigation and they decided not to pursue criminal charges. So I don't even really have any information about what came out, if anything, what came out of this second investigation. But again, they're coming to the same conclusion that it's consistent with an accident and there isn't further evidence to be able to pursue someone as a suspect. And at this point, because they didn't collect that evidence from the crime scene, I don't know how they would even be able to find something else because it's just botched already.
I think that they would need someone to come forward as like either eyewitness or some sort of, you know, accessory after the fact. I think someone from that party would need to come forward and say, "I know more than what I've told prior."
Right.
Yeah, because it's like, who, I mean, aside from the guy who was accessing the files illegally, like, it doesn't seem like there's a motive per se.
Right.
If these are all like her quote unquote friends, like, right, she's at this like.
Right. It doesn't feel like.
How weird.
I mean, I don't know. It feels in a way like from what we know about the attendees at the party that there isn't enough to jump to the conclusion that this was like a hate crime. But I think I think the most plausible story to me, which again, there isn't really evidence that we have to support this, but the idea that potentially Jose or the other man made some sort of sexual advance towards her, like she was out on the deck going to smoke a cigarette. He came out there to join her because the door was left open. So that allows for someone to have gone out there without the security, without the alarm system picking up on the door opening and closing again. So he could maybe he went out there to join her, tried to make a pass at her. They got into some sort of altercation and she was more forcefully, not even pushed over the side. It still could have been an accident, but like, that makes more sense to me, how she would have actually gone over that railing. I don't know. I mean, again, conjecture. I have no idea.
But I will say, though, kind of to your point earlier, we said if she went over the balcony accidentally, wouldn't someone have heard her potentially scream mm-hmm. or fall? If there was like an altercation on a balcony,
it would have been louder.
Right near where someone's sleeping and with the door open.
Yeah.
You'd think that it would be even louder.
Yeah.
Unless it was the kind of thing where something happened, she went over the railing, fell. Is there possible that then that person like went into the backyard to then kind of like...
Yeah, because I mean, she has so many injuries, but there was no like...
That's a lot of injuries.
But there's no weapon. There's no weapon.
Right, there's no weapon.
But I also don't know if they looked for one, but that there, you know, that's just not a piece of this. And I don't know enough about what the house looked like to be able to mm-hmm. tell you like where was the deck situated in relation to the bedrooms or where people were sleeping.
Right. And they also were drinking, and so there's a chance that like they all just kind of like passed out.
Right.
I mean, also conjecture, but is there a chance, there's always also the chance that like Jose, is that his name? Mm-hmm. That he wasn't checking the file on his own behalf, but on behalf of his girlfriend mm-hmm. who owned the house to see like, mm-hmm. what do they have mm-hmm. on my gal?
I mean, I will say that like, even if there was no foul play involved, even if this was just an accident, I could see someone who was that close to the case wanting to see what the file looked like to see if like things were going to be okay for them. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, because I think it looks so bad and there's no getting around that. And I think, of course, there could have been concern, even if it was an accident, that it was going to turn into something else because of like assumptions that people were making. So like, you know, there's a lot of complication here. The last thing I'll say, wait, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say like, I'm such a conspiracy theorist in these types of mysterious deaths where I'm like, well, it had to be more than one person.
Right.
It's kind of like the Faith Hedgepeth murder that we covered, which by the way, they've made an arrest during.
Ooh. Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Someone who was totally not related, I think, to any of the research that had come out. So
interesting.
Cool. But of course, like my theory is like, especially given the specs of like, oh, she's the only black person in this house. Mm-hmm. Something happens. There's an altercation. Things get out of hand. Multiple people are involved. Mm-hmm. The easiest thing to do is just put her in the backyard mm-hmm. and cover it up.
Totally.
Be like, she fell.
Totally.
And then if there's multiple people involved, there's multiple people to like corroborate each other's stories. And it's so easy to be like, we just went to bed.
Right. But that's, I guess it's just jumping to so many conclusions, assuming.
Of course.
Like assuming that Bridget, who was the last one to see her alive when she was apparently the only person still awake, like assuming she's telling the truth, like it just doesn't.
Interesting. I didn't even think about that.
I don't know. Well, I feel like I also feel like a piece of this is that there's like a lot of judgment associated with Tomla having like been drinking that much and smoking marijuana.
Yeah.
Where it's
what
like
was everyone else's blood alcohol content?
Right, like it's like you're at a fucking
blood
party.
Alcohol,
like
and
it's
just like slurred that.
Yeah, it just feels like there's implicit judgment when that she was like this intoxicated when everyone at this party was drunk and the whole point of them sleeping over was because they were going to get drunk.
Yeah, that already was raising a red flag for me where it's like, it'd be one thing if you're talking about like this like casual like PTA meeting and everyone else is like sipping on Chablis and she walks in with a double handle of Jose Cuervo that she pounds to the face and she's like, let's go.
Right. Which is just not.
But even then, doesn't.
But also like, go for it.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Go off, queen.
So last thing, it's worth noting that the lead investigator from the county, Mike Christian, did resign in October 2020 after allegations that he had sent multiple women that he was having extramarital affairs with confidential information about his cases, including Tomla's.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So there's screenshots of Snapchat conversations that I will not repeat, but that prove he made really tasteless and offensive jokes about Tomla's death to one of these women that he was having an affair with. Clearly, like, there's just some rot in this police force. And whether that means whether that contributed to how badly this case was investigated, like, I don't know, but it's definitely
probably
an important detail. So in the end, there still just aren't a lot of definitive answers for those who believe that Tomlin's death was not an accident, but there's also not a lot of definitive evidence to point to any other conclusion. It's still unknown if this was simply a tragic accident and horrible coincidence when it comes to the makeup of the people in attendance at the party, or if botched areas of the investigation could be covering up more truth. So I think in the end, we can at the very least say that the color of her skin probably contributed to the lack of care taken in investigating her death. Again, everything that we've been saying is conjecture. We're jumping to a lot of conclusions. We're just playing with some theories here, but it's just a really tragic situation no matter what. And, you know, she had a husband and children. It's just really, it's terrible. And there's just, yeah, there's not a lot of answers.
This is such a tricky thing too, because you know, like all the scenarios surrounding this case are like, it just feels like roadblock after roadblock. Just hearing you describe it to me, like, okay, like who's going to look into that?
Mm-hmm. Right, where it's like, yeah, of course there were security cameras, but they weren't working. Like, of course they didn't take fingerprints. Of course, like, someone moved the body and they didn't secure the scene. Like, it's just wild.
Yeah, I just don't think, I have a lot of thoughts about the law enforcement in our country, but I'm just like, you can't cut corners.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you choose to uphold, even a medical examiner, it's like, you need to be doing your due diligence, like, around, like, no matter what, because
right.
These cases, unfortunately, we hear the stories of this, like, time and time again about everything you just said, fingerprints not being taken, mm-hmm. witness testimony not being taken, you know, rape kits not being taken, mm-hmm. Evidence getting lost, evidence getting destroyed. It's just like, it's crazy to me, especially in modern day technology where it's like, it's not that hard.
Right. This only happened a few years ago. It doesn't feel like we should be this in the dark about these sorts of things. And I'm sure for her family, it's infinitely more frustrating. Oh. So.
Well, and it'd also be one thing, I mean, who knows what they've been able to share privately, but, you know, if there was some sort of true, like, explanation, oh, like, these injuries could be caused by her falling this way from this angle,
right.
You know, maybe she hit something on the way down, right. Like, something to be like, oh, these explain these injuries, instead of just being like,
right.
Looks like a fall to me.
Right, which, like, from what I've seen, I haven't seen anyone go in depth about, like, exactly how each injury could have been had.
There's a lot of injuries.
It's a lot. So that's the story. I wish we had more to go off of, but that's
that's why it's these types of cases are unsolved,
yeah.
And why cases go cold is because of, you know, incompetence through the investigation and unwillingness, I'm sure, in a lot of ways due to racial motivation to a racist motivation to not actually take the time and care to look into these types of things.
Right. Well, I guess on that note, like, do we want to end with some petty complaints?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You go
classic
first.
Full 180. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my complaint of this week has to do, as you know, I'm on a Peloton journey.
I love that for you.
Past like 4 or 5 months, really enjoying it. You know, I've never been one to subscribe to any sort of like exercise phenomenon. I've always found it like really off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
But given COVID and whatnot, I feel like it was at a point where it's like, I don't feel safe going back to a gym, but I need to do something to better my body.
Right.
So really enjoying the Peloton, and this is actually not even like Peloton specific. It's really just like any type of exercise specific. I hate so much when you've like worked out, you're sweaty, even if you take some time to like cool down,
mm-hmm.
and then you go shower and you mm-hmm. get out of the shower and your body like hasn't registered that you're done mm-hmm. working out. And so you're like still sweating post shower. It is so annoying.
I used to like, back in the day when I used to go to the office and sometimes I would like go to a workout class before work. And then like, cause there was one gym that I would go to near my office. So I would like shower right after and like sort of immediately go to work and just be sweating at my desk for hours.
I did the same thing. I used to, back at my old job, there was a, I would go to like use the studio below my office and then just like go to work and just be like, this sucks.
And like, you're clean allegedly, but like, you're not really done, you know?
Yeah. I sometimes will try to do is, I did this today actually before we recorded, is I had like a 15 minute window post Peloton pre-recording. And I just like end up taking like a real lukewarm shower.
I love that.
Just like skewing cold, just to be like, all right, whatever, nervous system, whatever controls my sweat glands, like chill out.
Good for you for already working out this morning. I'm barely awake.
Well, I have things to do and I need to shower anyways. And if you know anything about me, I hate showering, and especially hate showering twice in one day.
So yes.
I'm not about to do it.
For sure.
So I had that brief window and I was like, here we are.
Good for you, babe. My complaint is like, I mean, it's petty, but it's also like quite annoying. So basically, I live in an apartment that we're on the third floor. We're on like not a main road, but like a semi-busy street, but sometimes. And for the past few months, the entire street in front of my building has been deeply under construction in a way that I
really,
don't understand what they're doing. Like, they seem to be sort of digging into the sidewalk to fix like a pipe issue that is like extremely extensive. Like, they're ripping up the sidewalk just for blocks. And I swear this has been going on for such a long time. I don't actually know how long it's been going on, but over this past week, they have moved on to the section of the sidewalk that's directly in front of our windows, and like my bedroom is right there, and they start jackhammering at 8 a.m., which like, you know, I should probably be up by that time on a weekday anyway, and I usually am, but just to be awoken by a sound that is vibrating the entire apartment in a way, and I, you know, I do not blame the people that are doing this work at all. I'm sure it needs to be done. They're out there in the cold having to complete this project, like whatever they're doing, good for them. But it's just really loud. And the entire sidewalk is just like crumbled now. So
yeah.
And I just feel like there's gotta be a better way.
I think about this all the time whenever there's construction, where it's like, especially like if you're doing like a long drive, like the New York to Boston drive, I've obviously done like a million times, and no matter what, there's always some construction, and I'll be like, oh, why are you doing construction at like 10 p.m.? And it's like, well, of course they're doing construction at 10 p.m. It's because there's not many cars on the street.
Right.
Yeah, I will say it's interesting having also lived in Brooklyn on a very busy street. There are times when like construction or like loud noises would keep us up at night. And then now moving to the suburbs where it's almost the opposite. I'm like, it's too quiet.
Oh, I'm sorry, babe. But yeah, anyway,
but what are you gonna do?
That's about it.
Yeah. Well,
thank you guys so much for listening.
Oh, yeah.
As always, you can follow us at RWF Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and email us at rwfpodcast@gmail.com. Grant is very ahead on his research for this season, but I am certainly not. So if you've got some ideas, if you have stories that you want to hear us talk about, send them our way. Send us a DM. Send us an email.
Yeah, we do love hearing your suggestions.
True crime, spooky, ghost stories, whatever it is.
Yeah, send over things that like maybe don't often get covered by other podcasts, or like aren't really in the current vernacular per se. I love hearing about things I haven't heard of before.
Me too.
One of the ones I'll be doing in the next couple weeks is one I've just been like itching to do for years because it's like such a fascinating story. But there are a couple other ones I found that kind of like, oh, like, I wouldn't have thought to do this one.
Yeah. So we're going to have some fun. We'll see you guys next week and for the next 9 weeks. So thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Get vaccinated. Get boosted. Stay safe out there. And
love you, babes.
Bye, bitches. Oh, shit.
Oh, why did I go with a nice thing?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Bye, bitches.
Bye, bitches.